Hey, Nora.
Hey, Sandy.
Guess what?
Oh, my gosh. What?
I have a new niece.
You have a new niece. Oh, my God. I think I saw the news online. Tell us about it.
Did you? Yeah. My cousin, Amy, who friend of the pod, who also has her own podcast, the Gritty Nurse Podcast, had a baby this weekend. And so I have a new niece. And so just sending her and the fam all the love as this new little one joins us in the world.
Well, that is so nice. Congratulations to her. I can't imagine having young children anymore. Yay. And this is not her first. So, I mean, good luck to you, Amy. My goodness.
Not her first, no. But, you know, she's entering a world with great siblings. So I'm really excited to meet her whenever I get the chance.
Oh, that's so great. I have news too, Sandy.
Ooh, what's your news?
Well, my news is more about both for both of us. Did you see on Instagram that I posted that we are the number two podcast in Canada for politics?
No, what? No, I didn't see this at all. Sorry. I'm like really bad at checking our own Instagram. But wait, we're number two?
For Canadian podcasts, yeah. So this week we hit number 8, and I don't pay totally attention to this stuff, of course, because it's kind of depressing sometimes. But this week we hit number 2 in Canada for Canadian podcasts, number 8 overall, if you include all the American podcasts. And do you want to try and guess who the only other Canadian podcast in the politics world was more listened to than us last week?
Oh, who beat us? Canadian, who beat us? I don't know who.
Peter Mansbridge and the Mansbridge, his podcast.
That's really embarrassing, Canada. That's really. I mean, fine. If that's what you want, that's what you get. No, actually, that's not the energy I'm bringing to this news. The energy I'm bringing to this news is deep gratitude for all of our amazing listeners. Thank you so, so much for helping to make us number two. And as a, like, besides the gratitude that we're about to show you in naming all the folks this week that that provided a donation to the pod, we're also sending you our thanks by doing what we can to get out there and have more live shows, one of which will be occurring April 20th in Edmonton.
Yes. Okay. So for folks in Edmonton, you might be wondering, Nora, you announced last week tickets were going to be for sale. They were for sale and then they're not for sale. Listen, there's some crosswires with this thing. It's happening. It's at the Citadel Theater at 3:00. We're going to have a reception after. The details around the reception have delayed signing the contract with the venue, and the venue has to sell the tickets. And so they were kind of pissed that I started selling tickets. I didn't know that. And I was like, oh my God, I'm sorry. If you've already bought tickets, I'm going to try and figure out the cleanest way possible to make sure that you don't have to rebuy them or anything like that. But that means, like, just make sure you're free. And there's lots of tickets. I think we have a 350 seat venue. So we probably won't sell out in a week. The second that they're available, they will be at the Citadel Theater website at their box office. And that's where you're going to have to get tickets.
Okay, great. Thank you for that clarification. And we, you know, we're doing this right. We're doing this the right way. We're making sure that everyone that we are working with, we're working with them in the way that they want to be worked with. So in addition, yeah. We've got gratitude. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you so much to everyone that that shared the podcast this past week. We'll talk a little bit about that bonus episode because we had a lot of really wicked feedback on that. But thank you so, so, so much this week to Juliana, Autumn, Andrea, Francois, Madge, and a different Andrea. You folks are amazing.
Thank you so, so much. So Nora, yeah, the little addendum that we recorded, perhaps our very first, maybe like emergency episode, if it can be called that, I think it's getting some good feedback. And so I'm really glad that we decided to do that. And, you know, if we encounter other stories like that again, it just gives us the sort of feedback that we know that that's the kind of thing that you folks are looking for. So we'll make sure to do that again if we need to. And I'm sure we will need to again at some point in the future. But yeah, lots of great, great feedback. So thank you to those of you who've been sharing that short episode that we made last week and sending us the feedback that you have on it.
Yes, totally, totally, totally. So a couple of housekeeping things. Number one, you may have heard on my track in the last couple of weeks and even months that my voice has been skipping and it has been driving me nuts. I can't figure out what it is. And so I've subbed in cords, I've subbed in mics, I've changed my USB interface. I mean, this is getting very techie. So sorry if this is boring to you, I won't be much longer. Nothing was working. Tonight, I changed the dongle. Like literally the USB to mini USB dongle that goes in my Mac, and I think it's fixed. So if it's not yet fixed and this episode is as jumpy as it has been, that's a pain for me because I have to do a lot of re-editing to fix all of that. But thank you for bearing with me, and check your dongles, folks. So sometimes there's some problems in that. And Sandy, we're going to take a little bit of a break next week.
Yeah, just a little bit of a break. We're going to take the long weekend to do long weekend things. And we hope that you have the time to do that yourselves. And then we'll be back the week afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing too long. Nothing too much. And I'll try to enjoy the break. I know that you will, too.
Definitely.
So what a week of politics again. And we're going to be talking about that week of politics. But specifically going back to this, to that emergency motion, you know, we saw one kind of strategy on display with that. And then later the week of, Pierre Poilievre took the completely different strategy. And tonight's episode is going to untangle these different strategies and conclude that one of these strategies will probably win the next election. And one of them is not going to win the election.
Yeah. So in case you hadn't seen it, there was a non-confidence vote this week that was served by the Conservatives. Was it over the genocide that Canada has been supporting? Was it, Nora?
Nope. I think that the Conservatives have staked out the pro-genocide position very, very clearly.
Got it. Was it over broken promises? I mean, pick your poison, whether it's, you know, pharmacare or dental care or whatever else that might be on the agenda. Was it any of those things?
No.
I suppose I'm naming things in which non-confidence motions could have been taken by other parties, not necessarily Conservatives. Ooh. Was it over, let me just throw out a random idea, the carbon tax?
Oh, ding, ding, ding. Pierre Poilievre's ticket to victory in the next election, whether that is in a month or whether that is in 18 months, which actually, Sandy, I learned something this week.
What's that?
Did you know that the election date has been changed? The next election date has been changed by a week?
No. Why? That's weird.
That is weird. So we have fixed election days in Canada, right? They tend to happen sometime in October, but they don't always line up perfectly. And the election day was just changed very quietly to allow everyone who was elected in 2019 to get their pension. Because had it been the week earlier, they wouldn't have been elected for 6 years to get their pension.
Wow. Okay, cool. Great.
So you're not going to hear that one in the mainstream news because that one helps all parties. People were elected in all parties in 2019 for the first time and are still in there. But, you know, next time you see election news, keep that in mind. But so this was over the carbon tax. And, you know, the Conservatives took it so seriously that, like, Poilievre wasn't even in the vote. But what did they gain from pulling such a stunt that is rightfully called a stunt? And I don't know if you can call it a waste of time. Like, Sandy, what does a party get by serving something that they know is likely to fail?
Yeah. And just to be clear, I mean, we didn't say it, but I think it's quite obvious. Like, it did fail. I mean, Justin Trudeau is still prime minister, in case you were wondering. And it failed on a vote of 204 to 116. So what do they get by a failed motion? They get to point to their base. They need to get to address their base and say, look, we are fighting Justin Trudeau on this. And the other parties actually are not. We are trying to protect you from increased costs to your life, which is how they talk about taxes generally, but definitely the carbon tax. We are trying to protect you from this cash grab that Justin Trudeau has implemented. And look, all the other parties, they've banded together to protect it, to protect him, to support him. And we are the only ones who are actually fighting for you.
That's a really powerful message, actually. And the reason why I think it's powerful isn't necessarily because I actually have any, belief in anything that they say. But I've seen a lot of people who are not political, people in my life who I know from, life and not necessarily from politics, who saw this attempt at a confidence motion as a way to really challenge Justin Trudeau. And friends of mine were celebrating this vote as just to say, like, yes, there is a manifestation of the anger that I feel with our prime minister. And thank God a party has lost confidence in him. And that to me seems like, it's obvious, but it's also like really, really rhetorically important considering how bad things are for average people right now. And Poilievre ever could have used any issue. He's very smart to use the carbon tax because it's a tax and taxes sound bad, even if people are getting money back and however the provinces are going to deal with this. I'm in a province that's had a carbon tax for years. I've never even noticed the impact of the carbon tax on my life. And so they're using it very, very cynically. But they know exactly what they're doing because they know that Canadians need to see someone actually stick it to the prime minister right now.
Yeah, the Conservatives, their statement on it was that Justin Trudeau has created the worst economic conditions since the Great Depression, and Canadians have lost faith in this government. Only common sense Conservatives will axe the tax and bring home lower prices for everyone. Like, it is a pretty clear statement of what the Conservatives are trying, the sort of messaging the Conservatives are trying to push moving into an election season about the failure of the Trudeau government, which everyone feels. Everyone feels the pressure of an economy that, doesn't care about workers, doesn't care about average families, average people. And like, just imagine if this was another party going in and saying like the Justin Trudeau government has failed average people. Like, we're feeling the squeeze economically. And where do they spend their money? On war overseas, on protecting Israel, on sending weaponry and support to wars that are occurring elsewhere. And we can have that here. We could have those sorts of monies supporting people here, and using that in a fucking non-confidence vote, like, that would make sense. It would also make sense to say, like, in a world that we're in right now, people are desperate for dental care, for farmer care, and instead they're spending money on these other things. Like, morally, we've talked about morally why it would have made sense for any party, but certainly the left parties to try to force a non-confidence vote over a fucking genocide that's happening. But there's ways that, like, this sort of rhetoric, this argument that the Conservatives are putting forward could have been put forward also by the NDP. And it's one of the things that, of course, we're quite frustrated about, because, like, why couldn't you lose a vote, a non-binding motion last week, right? Like, that, it was like too risky to lose a vote, let alone lose a non-confidence motion, which they, or win it, for fuck's sake, at least put some pressure on the Liberals, even through the threat of one.
But that's so contradictory to how the NDP has talked about this stuff for so long, because it's like, if you recall, all of the narratives that support the supply and confidence or the sucking and blowing agreement has been, this is not the right time for an election. Canadians don't want to go to an election. Canadians want stability. Canadians want good government. This is playing politics. Canadians don't want an election. And it's like, just because you put forward a non-confidence vote, number one, if for the in the NDP's case, it doesn't mean it's going to pass. You're the third party. Like, are you third party, fourth party, third party, whatever. There's four parties ahead of them. three bars ahead of them, the fourth. But it shows that you understand the pain that Canadians are feeling right now. Now, is it fair for Polly ever to say that this is all Justin Trudeau's fault? Obviously not. Stephen Harper bears a lot of responsibility for this. The premiers bear responsibility for this. Polly is going to make it worse. Like, we know that. But it doesn't actually matter, because politics is not just the act of passing laws and policy and public administration and governments, but it's also smoke and mirrors. And so if you've got two choices, and one choice is we're gonna actually try to take out our sword and we're gonna try and needle the prime minister, because we know Canadians need to hear that from their representatives. That's one strategy. The other strategy is you put your sword away and say, look, we've got enough confidence in this prime minister and what he's doing to say that we're not actually going to threaten to bring down the government. Now, in those two diverging paths, it's very clear which one is going to have more political currency for you, especially if the affordability crisis, the housing crisis, name all the crises that, like, you know, the environment and war and everything are supposed to be issues that you own. And so, like, I mean, I feel like we maybe talk about this too much, but it's like kind of the biggest issue for left-wing people in Canada, if we're talking about parliamentary politics. It's the complete collapse of the NDP to do anything useful. And, you know, you can argue that the utility of the dental care promise, or the promise to do pharmacare, or, you know, the GST thing that they did a year or two ago or whatever, like, that was all worth it. But it's like, that wasn't worth it. That absolutely wasn't worth it. If you have the ability to bring down the government with a confidence vote, you're going to get more fucking action on pharmacare than if you hand over your party's autonomy to a political enemy. And the Conservatives know that very, very, very well. And every time Pierre Poilievre says you have abandoned the working class to the NDP, he's right. I mean, he hasn't also abandon the working class, because he's going to fuck them. Of course, we know that. But he's right. And that's a really difficult place for the NDP to be in right now.
Yeah, I also think that it's like, for the Liberals, they like don't seem to really understand like the political world that we're in right now anymore. Like, I'm wondering like where they are. Like, where are you at the helm? Also, I think their latest thing against the Conservatives was this weird video that they had made, you know, like that kind of attacks the Conservatives on housing, which is like, it's like nice try, but like you're in power right now. Housing is like has reached crisis levels, as we're reading in the news every day, and your attack is on how like Pierre Poilievre used to be housing minister. And as soon as you explain that, like you start to say the sentence, like I feel like people are like, oh God, whatever, you know, like you've been in power forever, right? Like you can't win on that. And then when you like see how like a lot of people are getting some news these days, like Instagram accounts like Six Buzz. Are you familiar with that Instagram account, Nora?
I am familiar with no Instagram accounts.
Oh, that's hilarious. Except our own, of course.
I am familiar with our own Instagram account, but even that is a little shaky.
Well, it's like it's a little shady. It follows like this like kind of new tradition of Instagram accounts that are like quite urban. They start pretty local, and they might like show hilarious things that are happening in the city. Pick your city. And hilarious or troubling or whatever, like but they're usually presented in a funny way. So maybe something terrible goes wrong with transit, or maybe the transit system is flooding and it'll show that and be like, LOL, look
like
at
a
this.
Raccoon party or something.
Yeah. Raccoon party, people throwing things off of their balcony, like whatever it is. But a lot of these
that was all very Toronto content, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, some of it, but some of it is in other content, like other urban like accounts that are similar to this. A lot of these urban accounts tend to somehow become like really conservative accounts. Like, this is a trend. Yeah, if I can remember, I listened to a study on this on a podcast that if I can remember the name of it, I will share it with you folks later. But it was a long time ago. But about how, like, new, this is like a kind of new media strategy of conservatives to, like, create these sort of accounts that seem completely apolitical and then slowly start to introduce political content. And, like, there are these accounts in Canada, and they all support or appear to support Poilievre. They certainly do not support Justin Trudeau or Jagmeet Singh. And they seem really innocuous. They'll, like, ask questions. They'll show you a headline like, Poilievre is trying to save us money on taxes. What do y'all think about that? And that's all it'll say. But it's obviously very much created to sort of to get you to think in a particular way about politicians. And so if people are getting their news that way and are coalescing that way, because then you'll read the comments underneath and people are engaging with each other about why they agree that this is a good thing that Poilievre has done, or they'll say something like, at least someone is supporting us or whatever, and then people will be discussing underneath. I mean, like, this is a huge way that people are getting their news. And a failed non-confidence motion works great on those sorts of platforms. A video that is like somewhere in the realm of like 7 minutes that goes through and explains how Pierre Poilievre doesn't really care about housing because once upon a time he used to be housing minister. Now stay with me, like, whatever, like that's not going to reach people at this time. And I mean, going into the election, it's like, I don't know. It's like, fuck, like, do people understand what world we're living in? Do the political parties? I think the conservatives do, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure people are listening to this and you know people in your circle who might not be conservative voters necessarily, but who will more or less be easily convinced to vote for them because of these tactics. And, you know, the way that you described that Instagram or these Instagram accounts, they practiced on Facebook first, and they practiced with pages like Canada Proud and Ontario Proud, because for every like political post, there was always three or four other posts that were like, share if you like winter, share if you've been stuck in a snowstorm like this, tell us what your favorite thing at Tim Hortons is. Like, really, really innocuous Canadiana that average people, I mean, who might have nothing better to do at all than to say, I love a double-double. Does anyone else love double-doubles? And there it is. And so they practice on that demographic, which is a different demographic than the one that's on Instagram, of course. And, you know, let us not forget that these platforms don't have news anymore that we can easily access. And so these messages from sites that are not expressly news sites penetrate way deeper than they might otherwise penetrate. So I think you're totally right in explaining it as the conservatives are living in a world that exists and the liberals are not, which then brings me back to the NDP. And I mean, there's a couple of things with the NDP that I think have to be said really, really clearly. Number one, Jagmeet Singh is obviously not in it right now. His head's not there. His body's not there. He doesn't seem to like really care about what's going on. He's not convincing when he talks. When he talks, it's like, you're not sure, he's either bored or maybe he doesn't understand what's going on, or maybe he's in his mind imagining being literally anywhere else but in this press conference right now. That's a political problem for the NDP for sure. But if you look at this strategy of launching a non-confidence vote as just like a fuck you to the government, and we think about this motion on Palestine, it is so interesting that the NDP thought it was more strategic for the cause. So not just them personally, but for the cause, to get Canada's governing body, governing party, to take a position that they could agree to, rather than putting forward a position that's too radical for them to agree to, have them vote against it and use that as an opportunity to organize further. It's like, for me, it's really, really clear that the only winner in that scenario was the Liberals, because the Liberals have the cover to say, oh, wow, you know, we heard from Canadians. This is a really important issue. We're going to call for a one-way arms embargo, even though the motion had called for a two-way arms embargo. And, oh, Canada sends double the amount of, we purchase double the amount of military equipment dollar for dollar than we actually give to Israel. And also, by the way, Sandy, do you know what our biggest export to Israel is? This is so strange. And I'm asking you as if you could guess, and there's no way in hell you're going to guess this.
Is it a mineral?
It is not a mineral.
That would have been my guess. What is it?
Fragrant plants.
Wait. Sorry, did you say fragrant plants?
Yeah, fragrant plants. And someone, I said this on Twitter, like, what
like
the hell?
Like potpourri.
But potpourri's dead. Potpourri might not count as a fragrant plant, but someone said that they thought it might be ginseng, which makes sense. But I forget that if ginseng is fragrant, so maybe that's it. But maybe it's, I don't know, pot. I don't know, like fragrant plants. That's so random. So there you go, BDS folks.
Yeah, you're right. I definitely never would have guessed that.
The new thing we should go after is fragrant plants. But, you know, this it just shows that the mentality of the NDP is like just not attuned to trying to do politics, to not, you know, like let alone try to win in the next election. Like, I just don't see how they think that they're going to translate what they have currently into what they're going to need to actually have any impact in the next election. And if everyone's afraid of Polly ever, as I mean, you should be, because the guy is obviously a snake. There has to be different tactics taken to deal with him. You can't just call him a snake. He'll be like, how dare you? I am better than snakes. I'm 10 snakes. And you're like, whoa, that was a surprising response. But OK, it seems to be working. But, you know, you also can learn from the strategy that the conservatives are employing. There's a reason why they're going after Trudeau. And it's because he's massively not popular, which poses a problem for the party that's propping them up right now.
Yeah. And speaking of like knowing what world you're living in, like Kensington Palace, do you think they know what world we're living in right now? I raise this because I know that you desperately want to talk about it, but you know what?
The federal politics like
listeners,
that?
Fear not. We're not completely off. We're going to go back to what world we're living in. There was like an intelligence report that was released this week that talks about how people are kind of losing faith in people in Canada are losing faith in the politics, the policymakers, and in our institutions. And that could be a massive crisis for us coming forward. Like, no shit. But I think that this is all related to like government, policymakers, politics, even media, not really understanding what world we're living in right now, when it, you know, vis-a-vis the people who are like living it on the ground. But I think that Kensington Palace is just like a funny place to start. And I know that you wanted to talk about it. So, Nora, does Kensington Palace know what world we're living in right now?
No, that's not the right question. It's, do we know what world they're living in right now? And the answer to that is no. Mere mortals have no clue the fuckery that happens at Kensington Palace. I mean, if anyone in the world is drinking baby's blood, it's them. Right? Like, if anyone in the world is doing the craziest shit that you can imagine, it's happening there. And I don't want to get into the most sadistic, horrific things. I mean, I've seen Sallow and I still can't think about that movie. It's so horrifying. I'm not even saying again, it's so bad. It's so bad. It's the worst movie I've ever seen. Okay. I was dating someone who was like, want to see this movie? And after halfway through, I was like, why are you showing me this? I want to run out of this apartment right now. He's a nice guy, but
You don't watch movies, so that's not saying much.
Okay. I'll leave. I'm going to see the responses from people who know what I'm talking about in this episode. They're gonna be like, whoa, I can't believe Nora mentioned that movie. Okay. So like they're the royal family. This is not a random family. This isn't even a celebrity family. This is the motherfucking royal family. And I think it is so cute that Kate Middleton comes out and says, I have cancer. And somehow like 90% of people are like, oh my God, she has cancer. Oh my God, her poor children. As if they exist and are real. I mean, like, they exist, but, you know, if you want to look at how people in power spin things, this is a really good place to look, because the narrative that has come up to this day has not suggested what she was going to announce was going to come out. And if I was like a extraordinarily well-paid PR professional, I'd be like, cancer, it's going to be cancer, because it's the best disease someone can have, because they'll either die immediately or they won't die. And it's mysterious and people won't ask any questions because everyone has experience with how terrible this disease is. And so we're going with cancer. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to believe a conspiracy theory about this, but I am saying that I want to see 900 more pieces of proof before I'm about to be like, I trust this video.
Yeah, but I think that the greater point is that it doesn't matter. And all of the...
just like goading me into talk about this, just seem to be like, Nora, this is bullshit.
Yeah, it is though. Like, and I just, in that it is bullshit, like I grow weary of the way that these sorts of things are discussed online, where, you know, someone says like, is this even true? And then someone else says, oh my God, you're so insensitive. Like, what did she ever do to you? Like, you guys, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, the only, like, the existence of these folks shouldn't even be real. Like, none of that should be real. Like, and so discussing it as though it is a fairy tale in a book is not, it's not the worst thing. It's like discussing it in the way that, you know, like they put themselves in that position and they recreate those positions into the centuries, like not because they're benevolent or deserve anything from you. And if people want to, you know, spend some of their leisure time opining on whether or not this is real or not, like, go forth and enjoy your leisure. But more importantly, the world that we're living in right now, gosh, okay. So an intelligence report has come out that says, that Canadians are losing faith in our political institutions and that this could be a massive crisis for us. And Nora, to that I say, no shit.
But you know what, Sandy, what would make us have full faith in our political institutions?
A revolution?
I'll help you out. No, if our next queen had cancer and
oh my God, please stop
right now.
Please stop.
this is I think actually like where it does tie in, right? Because it is like, so this RCMP report, and the news broke kind of, I think, from National Post and their absolute shittiest piece of garbage, Tristan Hopper, who's too much of a coward to actually like not have me unblocked on Twitter, but whatever. And you know, the report is actually really, really interesting to read because it is like a bunch of completely out of touch, people who are like, oh, hey, Bill, the people, they're getting restless, man. Holy fuck, what are we going to do? What do you mean they're getting restless? Well, like their rent just like went up really, really high and they can't afford butter right now. And like, they're kind of pissed and, like, no shit. This is the material conditions under which we live. And I just want to mention a tweet from Elamine Abdul Mahmoud from CBC. And Elamine, you know, he's a great guy and has podcasts and shows on CBC. And he posted a tweet that said two different approaches to reporting on the same RCMP report. And I think that this is really, really fascinating because it really cuts to the heart of the lack of trust that we have in our institutions. And so the first headline is from a report from CBC's Elizabeth Thompson. And the headline is this: Canada faces a series of quote unquote crises that will test it in the coming years, RCMP warns. And the rest of this article is literally just quoting from the report. Like, Canadians could have read that themselves. So the second story from Tristan Hopper at the National Post, and I say he's a piece of shit. Like, this guy is a tremendous piece of shit. His headline is, and he's a columnist, so that right off the bat is going to change the way that this is written. But his headline is, Secret RCMP Report Warns Canadians May Revolt Once They Realize How Broke They Are. And I mean, Elamine doesn't say this, but the insinuation, of course, is like one is great news and one is torquing the issue. And I actually think that, and I made this point as well online, that like The thing about the way that the National Post framed that report was so much more human and connected to what people are experiencing. Any Canadian can read this report, and CBC does not need to just be like, and then the report says this, and the report says this, and then it says this, oh, and it says this. And instead, you've got Hopper being like, when they realize how broke we all are, when we realize how broke we all are, things are going to get shittier and things are going to get rough. And it's like, that is a narrative that's helping to frame this narrative in a way that people will connect with it. And why wouldn't CBC do the same thing? Oh, because they're part of the destruction of all of our institutions as well. And I think, like, on an issue like this, I mean, we can't get it wrong. We can't get it wrong because the stakes are way too high.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I mean, speaking to people in a way, I mean, again, like, I do think that the media apparatus is part of the issue here when it comes to our institutions that are not understanding what world we're living in right now. We can't afford to talk about these issues with, like, the arm's lengthness, the sort of, like, moving away from what it all means for people. And I would love to see more average people spoken to when these sorts of reports are made. But, I mean, this report in particular, the other thing that I think that it's missing in the CBC, I mean, that's one of the articles that came out in the CBC. There's another one that's called, the headline is Anti-Authority Narratives Could Tear Fabric of Society, Intelligence Report Warns. And it says, and I mean, this might be a part of the language of the report, because so much of, as you alluded to, reporting is just like reporting exactly what like the thing says rather than like giving it some sort of analysis as well. It says, the report, which is prepared by a federal task force that aims to safeguard elections, says the Canadian violent extremist landscape has seen the proliferation of conspiracy theories, a growing lack of trust in the integrity of the state, and more political polarization. It says baseless theories, disinformation and misinformation have spread to larger audiences, exposing online users to a vast network of narratives that undermine science, systems of government, and traditional figures of authority. It's like ridiculous to me that we're not like talking about who we're talking about in this report. Like, be frank. It's not just like, wow, a whole bunch of Canadians, just random smattering of like diverse people from coast to coast are, falling prey to these baseless theories. No, they do have an ideological bend. So just name what the ideological bend is and what the actual threat is and why, but also do some like analysis and reporting about why people are being attracted to these theories and so on. Like, does it make sense that people are losing faith in their institutions at a time when most people in Canada who should be able to have a primary care doctor can't find one, when there are lineups around the block for people who want to get a doctor, when people don't know if they're going to be able to afford rent, let alone the skyrocketing costs of groceries? And I've seen some reports that, like, actually, if you take a look, the groceries aren't going up that much. It's like, you guys, like, everything has gone up, which means every little small incremental thing is putting intense pressure on average people. And so with that as the context, why wouldn't you search for some sort of something to explain to you why this is happening? Something that makes some semblance, like has a narrative that has some semblance of sense attached to it. And when there are people who have a particular ideological bent who are willing to give you an easy narrative, we need to fucking assassinate Justin Trudeau, or whether it's international students, or whether it's this, that, or the other, whatever it is, those easy things become important things, narratives, stories to attach oneself to that can help you explain your life. Like, is that going to be a threat to the system? Like, no shit.
Well, in case in point is the fact that our podcast is the number two podcast in Canada this week for politics. I mean, people don't want to listen to this kind of mealy-mouth, fake, not authentic, not getting to the real point of what is causing harm to people. They don't want to listen to that. And I'm always fascinated, too, by how these reports collapse every ideology that is critical of the state into, like, one giant threat. You know, like there are movements that have been critical of the state in this country since this country has existed. There are nations that exist in this country that pose an existential crisis to the continuation of the Canadian state. There are solidarities built between oppressed peoples that are trying to undo and fight against the harms that are caused by the state, and who under no circumstances are going to come around and say, you know what, I was wrong. Actually, what we've got is pretty good. Those folks are completely shut out of the any kind of mainstream platform unless what they're saying is palatable to the mainstream, and who, like, mainstream being who media leadership owners determine what is, like, fair. And we don't have to look further than how Gaza has been reported on in Canada, or how it's not been reported on in Canada, to see that massive disconnect between average people whose political orientations are all over the map, and who see the fact that Gaza is now the site of the worst on record amputation campaign of children, of the most deadly 5 months for children or 6 months for children than five last years of global war. You know, like, just name any statistic about what Israel is doing right now in Gaza, and most people of conscience will say, what the fuck? And that is not the message that comes out of our journalists. That is not the message we get in journalism, unless we have to push and push and push and push and push and push and push. And in fact, like, you know, there's other narratives that we have to, like, navigate or listen to, or that take up space. I mean, the fact that Anthony Housefather had so much airtime last week is such a good example of that, because it's like why mm-hmm. why would a random backbench MP from Montreal get all of this time to talk about why he supports a genocidal campaign that Israel is doing? Why? What is the what? Like, there are hundreds of MPs that you could ask their opinions on this. Why him? Why are we privileging this guy's opinion? How many Palestinians get that kind of promotion and access to CBC as someone like Anthony Housefather? And the big question is, like, oh, is he going to go to the Conservatives? Ah, blah, blah, blah. Like, who fucking cares? This is where Canadians disconnect from these institutions. And also, I mean, we just had the last week of venerating Brian Mulroney, my fucking God. And it's like, can't we just, like, not have to hear about this guy all the fucking time? Like, we now have Canadian doctors accusing the Israeli military of mass rape of Palestinians around Al Shifa Hospital, and the full giant page of the Toronto Star is Brian Mulroney's still dead. He's been dead for no more than a week. No, sorry, he's been dead since, oh, it's almost been a month. And here's the front page of the fucking Toronto Star. It's still Brian Mulroney is dead. Oh, and also Brian Mulroney did good things. He did good things for Canada, and everything of Canada is good. And then that classless piece of shit, Pierre Poilievre, at Brian's funeral is like, oh, but Canadians are so mad with the state of Canada today. And he didn't even turn that off for a single day. And it's like, the irony is that Poilievre is correct to mention how fucked everything is in this country at the same moment as Mulroney's funeral, because those things are connected. What doesn't make sense is, of course, how Poilievre is part of the same forces to make things worse. But no politician, I mean, no journalist has been like, oh, actually, it's a bit ironic he's saying this because he's fucking lying. Instead, it's just like how unclassless this man is. I thought watching the destruction of our institutions would be more fun, but actually it just became, like, really irritating.
Well, yeah, especially when it's clear that the people who understand how this devolution of our institutions is happening and are in fact driving it are the ones who are the best place to take over afterwards, which is the folks who are on the far right and the conservatives. Like, they know what world we're living in because they're creating it by and by. and everybody else is just kind of watching and, I suppose, praying for something else to happen, for some sort of a shift, for some sort of change. And you know what? Like, we have to use our power to demand that, like, we are, like, pull people into the world that we are living in right now to see what is happening and to see how we're all being manipulated into this what is going to happen after the next election.